The Dakota Access Pipeline of Standing Rock Sioux Chair Dave Archambault was in the audience.
I've spoken out many times in support of Chairman Archambault and the Standing Rock Sioux tribal movement. I've publicly labeled it an atrocity. And I do think that, as Heather said, this is a moment that is filled with possibilities for raising awareness. And I'm the short story is I am against it.
That was Al Gore speaking Sunday here at the Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah. Well, on Monday, water protectors walked down Main Street and linked arms to block the entrance to a Chase Bank lounge in order to protest the connection of one of the festival's leading sponsors to investment in the Dakota Access Pipeline. They were joined by actor and activist Shailene Woodley and two filmmakers whose Viceland series Rise about Indigenous resistance is playing at the film festival. That does it for our show. If you want to see all of our coverage here at the film festival, the Oscar nominations have been announced. Among the documentaries, 13th and Life Animated. You can see our interviews at democracynow.org. A very special happy birthday to Tarina Nadura. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkner, Marine Shea, Carla Wills, Laura Gattis, Diener, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Rabbi Karen, Honey Masood, Andre Lewis, Julie Crosby, Renee Feltz, John Hamilton, Dennis Moynihan, Nicole Salazar, and Tarina Nadura. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
On Progressive Spirit, I speak with Angela Yarber, creator of the Holy Women Icons Project.
We have these bold, brave, dancing, singing women who have created ritual and liturgy and leadership within their traditions, and yet whose names we do not know, whose stories we don't get to hear. And for me, that is part of the personal side of why I paint these icons, why I write about their stories.
Listen to weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/progressive spirit.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Abe Proctor. You are listening to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM, your community supported radio station in the greater Portland area. It's just me this week coming at you. Joe is not here. We hope to have him back next week. And here's a little look behind the curtain in the world of talk radio hosting. There's so much to talk about. There is so much to talk about right now. And we have an hour once a week. You know, you got to make some decisions. You got to make some decisions so your conversation doesn't get too cluttered. So while we could talk about about the unbelievably contentious relationship between the new Trump administration and the mainstream press, which is a fascinating psychodrama in its own right, we're not going to touch on that today. What we're going to talk about is the beginning of the resistance against President Trump, which we saw expressed not only here in Portland over the weekend, but all across the globe in a really extraordinary sort of way. So what I want to focus on primarily today is I want to hear your experiences from the various demonstrations that happened here around town or wherever it is you happen to be. I want to hear what you heard, what you saw, what you felt, what you thought, and what you took away from those experiences. Because this was, in many ways, an extraordinary thing, an extraordinary convergence of experience and of thought and of orientation, a commonality the likes of which doesn't happen very much in our modern world, but which needs to happen with increasing frequency if we are to push back against not only the Trump administration, but the corrosive power of global capitalism that it represents. So a few things before we move on to your commentary. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're also taking your written feedback at the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AbeandJoe and over the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. And what I want to get at with this discussion today, in addition to just hearing what you all experienced, is I want to talk a little bit about intersectionality. And here's what I mean by that. You can broadly characterize the marches that took place on Inauguration Day here in Portland last Friday and into the evening. You can largely characterize them in starkly different terms to the march, the women's march that took place on Saturday and which was mirrored, as I mentioned earlier, in cities across the globe. What happened on Friday night was decidedly darker, angrier, and more violent than what happened on Saturday here in Portland. Now, I didn't get out on Friday night. I wasn't there. So I need to hear what you saw, what you heard, what you experienced. I can tell you that I've watched what video there is available online of what happened. Here's what I saw. I saw police officers, law enforcement officers in Portland turning pepper spray upon crowds who, from what I could see, were behaving peacefully. Now, again, I wasn't there. I don't know if anybody misbehaved in terms of behaving violently, destroying property, physically provoking the police. I don't know. But what I saw on video showed me law enforcement officers in Portland turning pepper spray on demonstrating citizens and reportedly on groups that contained within them small children. Now, this, as reprehensible as it might be, would not be a first here in Portland. I myself have personally witnessed this at past demonstrations. So I want to hear about that. And what do I mean by intersectionality? Well, the march on Saturday, in contrast to what happened on Friday, was a very lovey, feel-good sort of thing. And it was wonderful and beautiful as far as that goes. We need much, much more of that in today's world. But here's what I also saw. I saw a lot of people on social media posting from the Saturday Women's March, posting pictures of themselves with police officers and saying supportive things about them, about how they were grateful the police were there to ensure safety, about how it was so nice to see police officers who supported the right of the people to organize and demonstrate. But here's the thing, everybody. Resistance without intersectionality is simply an exercise of white privilege. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is, if you're going to turn out for a peaceful demonstration and praise the police officers who were there for their behavior, you need also to criticize the police officers who shot pepper spray at groups containing small children. You need to also criticize the police officers who have a long history of visiting disproportionate violence upon people of color. It means that if you turned out for the Women's March on Saturday, intersectionality means you better turn out for the next Black Lives Matter march too. It means we're all in this together. Or we're just exercising our privilege if you happen to be a member of the dominant culture. If you happen to be a white person. That's what I'm talking about when I say resistance without intersectionality is simply an exercise of white privilege. Now, before we get to your descriptions of what you experienced, I want to talk a little bit about intersectionality as it pertains to what happened here in Portland. Now, if you've been following the organization of the Women's March here in Portland, you will know that along the way, the march lost the official support of the Portland branch of the NAACP. Now, full disclosure, that branch is headed by KVU's own Joanne Hardesty, and she may very well have something to say about this on her program Thursday morning here on KBOO. The NAACP withdrew their support from the march because they believed it to be fatally flawed in terms of its inability or its failure to offer a platform to advance issues of importance to communities of color and other underrepresented communities in Portland. In other words, they felt that the march as it was being organized was simply too white-centric, simply too focused on the dominant culture and its concerns, and dismissive of issues that impact underrepresented communities. So the NAACP withdrew its support. And in the wake of that withdrawal, there was an attempt to reorganize the march so that it did provide a sufficient platform for those communities I was discussing. And the woman in charge of that reorganization is named Margaret Jacobson. And she posted this comment after the march on Saturday. And I want to read it to you in its entirety because I found it to be pretty compelling, and I hope that you will as well. Now, I'm going to say in advance here that I'm editing it for this family-friendly radio program that you're listening to right now. So here's Margaret Jacobson. Yes, yesterday, and by yesterday she means the Women's March on Saturday, was a success because so many folks gathered and we got to be together. Yet, I've been grappling with the fact that I had to interact with policemen for days before this march. I had to push aside my fears in order to appease white women, because they believe that without the police, violence would break out at this march. They refuse to believe that that's actually the root of violence. I had to stand next to a police chief and a mayor while they lied about us being able to exercise our rights. There's been such an emphasis on us having permits. They kept saying it's for everyone's safety, and it was odd to have to basically buy safety for our marchers. It was odd that the night before, the policemen who were keeping us safe attacked protesters because they were protesting without a permit. It doesn't make sense to me that we have to pay to protest and demand liberation. It doesn't feel like liberation, and it definitely doesn't feel like a revolution. Now, the city and the police are using our march as this example of a peaceful protest. And she's talking about the Saturday march here, saying that this is the right way to protest. But we all know that's false. We know that so many of those people who came out yesterday will return back to their normal lives tomorrow, while those of us who live in the margins will continue to fight and to be told that we are too angry, that we are too loud, that we are creating a mess, that we need to just get along. While white parents demand police presence, I kept my kids close to me yesterday in hopes that they wouldn't have to interact with any cops. Because to my children, cops are thugs, thugs that harm for no reason. They are funded thugs. Yes, our contacts within the Portland Police Bureau were nice because we were following their rules. I'm so happy and proud that people felt united yesterday, but this isn't enough. This is far from over. Our city has to do better. I keep saying it, but I believe in community building, in long-term planning, in action on action on action, because I still can't breathe. Those are powerful words, and I think they get right to the nub of what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a wonderful and beautiful thing that so many millions of people turned out around the globe to protest the election of the great orange fascist in the White House. That's a wonderful and a beautiful thing, and we need more of that. But without intersectionality, we're not getting to where we need to be. We're all in this together. We all have to support one another. We have to acknowledge that even as some members of the protest on Saturday felt safer because of the presence of police, there are a lot of people who felt endangered because of the presence of the police. And it's okay to hold these two contradictory thoughts in mind. That is okay. But we need to acknowledge that the contradiction exists. We need to confront the contradiction, and we need to figure a way out of it. We need to arrive at a place where everybody's interests are being represented by this resistance, because without it, it's just an exercise in white privilege. Said the white guy on the radio. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is the Abe and Joe talk radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. You can give us a call at the number I just mentioned, or you can write to us, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or on Twitter at HonestAbe72. Let's go to the phones. Katrina, good morning. What's on your mind? Hello. All right, well, we can come back to Katrina if we can, maybe later. Katrina, give us another try, please. Who's next? All right. I think we're having a slight technical difficulty here. So I will go to some commentary here on Facebook. Christopher writes into the Facebook page to say, marches are good. They are political communication and part of any democratic system. but they're only effective if they motivate people to move into organizing continuous, focused action that ultimately leads to winning elections and passing your agenda into law. I think Chris makes a very good point here. Because that's what I, in the days after the march, I had some conversations with family members who are a lean conservative and who didn't participate in any of the resistance activities and frankly don't understand why anybody would want to. Somebody said to me, why do you do this? What's the point? What are you going to achieve? Nothing's going to come of it. Trump's not going to suddenly abandon his agenda and resign from office. Well, no. But there's reasons we turn out. Because it's good to be in the presence of other people who believe it's you as you do. There's a sense of power in being on the streets with thousands of your fellow citizens, exercising our constitutional right to assembly, to freedom of expression, to petition the government for a redress of grievances. These are all good things. They feel good. It's nice. It's fun. Protests are a good way to meet interesting and attractive people. There's all kinds of reasons why we do it. But Dan brings up a good point. They need to translate into continuous focused action that results in the winning of elections and the enactment of our agenda into law. I really couldn't have said it better. But that takes a long-term strategy, and that takes a maintenance of energy. And hopefully that's exactly what we're going to see in the days and weeks to come. And we're also going to have a special guest here in just a little while on the program to talk about exactly why protesting feels good and exactly why it's a good thing to do as a member of a larger community. All right, let's go back to the phones. Katrina, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Sorry about the glitch earlier.
No, I apologize. Probably my fault. Anyway, hey, I wanted to speak out for, I don't know how many people are out there that didn't participate in the protest, but I'm one of them. And I got to admit, it comes down to a pretty basic fear of being afraid of the cops. It's a very sad truth, but I didn't join in with my community. Hurts a lot. But I'm really thankful that there are people out there that are voicing their opinions for our people and our group and the minorities out there that are dealing with situations that, you know, white privileged woman like myself don't really get to deal with, don't mm-hmm. have to deal with. I just want to say that, and I wish the police would just put down the guns and all their gear and join us, because this violence on the street, especially downtown, it's very painful. And that's all I got to say. Sorry, I'm an emotional man. It's just it's rough out there, and you know.
Hey, these are emotional times. You had nothing to feel sorry for.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening, and thanks for calling in. Hang in there.
I will. Bye.
All right. Bye bye. Jack writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to ask why all of a sudden no provocateurs, you know, cops dressed like black bloc anarchists breaking stuff up. Good question. I don't know to the extent to which it's relevant to this situation. I wasn't there Friday night. I can't really comment too much on specific incidents that may have broken out. That's why I'm hoping to hear from you this morning. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Who's up next, Derek? Lynn, good morning. Good morning, Lynn.
Corey's here. This is Corey. Abe.
Oh, Corey. Sorry, Corey. Go ahead.
Hey, no problem. What's up? I just wanted to say I've been reading with Joanne Hardesty. I said she's an amazing woman. From what she said, I didn't want it to be part of a march if it's going to be a white woman kumbaya march. Mm-hmm. And I did see elements of that on Saturday. I saw elements of lots of things, but I did see elements of that. And this kind of boils down to feminism versus white feminism. White feminism, in my opinion, is inherently racist. When you had Elizabeth Cady Stanton, the leader of the women's suffrage movement, she hated the fact that black men had the right to vote, but she wanted, you know, men to have the right to vote. And when I look at white feminism, it's present in academia, in Hollywood, in our government, such as this sort of pantsuit nation sort of Facebook page that was marginalizing women of color. There's a space, I think, sometimes where white women want to be on peripherals. And I'm not going to sit back and dog white women. I'm married to a white woman. I love everybody. But I think that needs to be addressed. And I also find it sort of hypocritical to see people such as Scarlett Johansson out giving speeches where, and this is hypocrisy, she actually has a role in the movie where she's playing an Asian character, a well-known comic book anime thing that I'm into. I'm like, well, why is this is a character that's been Asian for years?
Yeah, I know exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, and so I'm just like, well, and yet you're out here talking about, well, what about the Asian woman that you took a job for, took a job from? So I think that the plight of the middle-class, straight, white American woman is not the same as that of an uneducated gay, you know, trans woman of color. And so there needs to be some sort of common ground and some sort of conversation because it's, yeah, I'm really kind of sick of, you know, living in Portland. I love this city, but yeah, the white woman, kumbaya, I do my thing. I have dreadlocks, but I don't have any friends of color. It's sort of like, look, you can do your thing, but it seems very superficial, and that's not helping the situation, and you're not helping yourself either. So I'll leave it at that, and I appreciate your show, man.
Hey, thanks very much for the call. I appreciate it also. Yes, that's exactly why I'm making this call for intersectionality this morning. It's not enough. It's not enough for the dominant culture to go out there and make some noise. We got to lift everybody up. We got to lift everybody up. And this is, regardless of how formidable and daunting the condition of the world might seem right now, this is an incredible opportunity for us to lift everybody up. And that's what I'm saying. So all of you middle-class white folks who are out there on Saturday, bless you for being there. It was, as I said, a wonderful and beautiful thing. But I want to see you at the next Black Lives Matter march. That's what I'm saying. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Who's next? Lynn, good morning.
Good morning. So you're talking about how much fun it is to do an action and talking about focused energy and long-term organizing. I love it when you talk dirty on the radio. Hey, I'm just calling to give a little heads up. I'm sorry I missed both marches. I wasn't physically up to it. But Wednesday night, there's going to be some fun, 6:30 at the Burgerville on MLK near the Rose Quarter. They fired a Hornet worker who's also a union person for forgetting to pay for a 70-cent bagel. And there's a big picket in action, 6:30 at that place and at that Burgerville near the convention center on MLK. And a good time will be had by all. I know people have been to any of the Burgerville actions before, but we really, you know, make things interesting. So I encourage everybody who didn't get enough fun over the weekend or who, you know, wants to have a little more to show up. And, you know, of course, it's not for everybody, you know. It's only for people that have a lousy boss who treated them about a failure or something like that. I'm sure that, you know, that's not that common, right?
No, never heard of it.
All right. Well, keep up the good work.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate the call.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. You are listening to the Abe Joe Talk Radio Show. This is KBOO 90.7 FM, your community-supported radio station in Portland, Oregon, and the greater Pacific Northwest. And I understand we've got listeners all around the globe. So if you happen to take part in any of these actions on Saturday in far-flung locales, please let us know. Let's go back to the phones. Dave, good morning.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
I can. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a black man, and I have cops in my family, and I wish I could go down and protest because I would really love to test them, okay? But the way I protest, whenever I see anybody on the street or whenever I get into a conversation, I remind them of what the Malala police told everyone on Channel 8 News, that it was not a hate crime to drag a black man down the street behind a car. I also can remind them of the dog that was stranded on a concrete block tributary in LA, in the LA River, right after Katrina, and they called five departments, fire units, to rescue one dog. Okay, and I just want people to know that's not right, and I do.
All right, thank you for the call. Another caller informs us very helpfully that Margaret Jacobson, the march organizer whom I quoted earlier in the show, is a gender nonconforming person and uses the them and they pronouns rather than the feminine pronouns that I used earlier. So sorry about that, Margaret. I won't make that mistake again in the future. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Rebecca writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/AbeandJoe, to say, thank you so much for discussing this issue of intersectionality. I've been thinking of this so much more since the Women's March. I have not been personally a victim of police violence, and I'm very aware that that is because of my white privilege. Yet, I was viscerally disturbed by the photos women posted posing with police, knowing full well the atrocious behavior of police against peaceful protesters on Friday night. It is imperative that we as white people continue to speak out about privilege, white supremacy, and the necessity of intersectionality in the quest for justice and freedom. Thank you. Rebecca, I think that hits the nail right on the head. Thank you very much for that. Let's go back to the phones. Gabe, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Hey, I think what Rebecca said hit the nail on the head right there. Like, I went down to the Women's March with my 13-month old daughter.
Oh, good on you.
And we had a wonderful time. It was her first protest. But I, too, every time I walked by police, held her a little bit tighter and was a little bit more nervous. I had a lot of comrades out there the day before who were gassed and herded around and the victims of police brutality, and it was just awful. So I get what everyone's saying about the race analysis, and I think everybody that I've heard so far is right on point. But I did just want to say how great of a time we had at the Women's March. I thought it was just, it's more than just a good time. I think those kind of events lead towards the needed formation for our young people. And so there exists a need for the kind of march that is not going to result in tons and tons of pepper spray. And that's not on the people, that's on the police, but still there exists that need for our young people to get out there and receive that sort of formation. And I witnessed, 8-year-old little girls using bullhorns for the first time. And so it was just a
there's a dangerous combination.
To thank Margaret and the rest of the people who put so much time and effort into planning that, because it meant a lot to me and my daughter.
Well, that's wonderful, and good on you for bringing your daughter to the protest. I brought my 3-year-old son. It was also his first protest.
And there was a ton of kids out there, right?
There were, yeah.
Like their first protest, and it's like the beginning of forming them into what the world needs.
So. Yeah, precisely. Yeah, and that was part of what made that protest so beautiful, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, well, thank you for the call, sir.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Amy writes into the Facebook page to say, excuse me, I was there for the protest on Saturday, and while on my way there, I saw 2 flatbed trucks packed with riot police in full gear driving into downtown, apparently to be staged and waiting to, quote, control the crowd. I did not bring my children because I, too, have witnessed police pepper spray a mother and her small child at an anti-war march. Yeah. So despite the fact that, as far as I know, Saturday's march was completely peaceful, and there were no outbreaks of violence that I know of. Nevertheless, 2 full trucks full of police and riot gear on the back burner just in case. That is how thin is the line between a peaceful, seemingly officially sanctioned protest and something like we saw on Friday night. That line is quite thin, regardless of how warm the feelings might be during an event like Saturday's. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You are listening to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO, 90.7 FM. Coming up this morning at 9 on Alternative Radio, Gary Young speaks on the fear-mongering around gun rights and the young people that are caught in the crossfire. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Letters in Politics presents Georgetown sociology professor Michael Eric Dyson, who's visiting KBOO today to discuss his new book, Tears We Cannot Stop, A Sermon to White America. Mr. Dyson will perform a reading tonight at Powell's at 7:30. And let me tell you something. this is well worth your time. Michael Eric Dyson is one of the country's foremost intellectuals and one of its foremost exponents on matters of race and class. He is well worth your time. And that's just an example of the kind of programming that KABU works to bring you every day of the week. That's today, 10:15 on Letters in Politics. At 11 on stage in Studio D, Mae Roberts speaks to the artistic director of Triangle Productions' new work, Forever Dusty, a play about famed singer Dusty Springfield. And at 11:30, it's Art Focus. Andre Middleton presents Creative Women Making a Difference. He'll talk to Natalie Figueroa about YGB and previews Renee Lopez's solo show, Life Through My Lens. All this and more coming up today on KBOO. Now we're going to go to a special guest. Joining us today on the program is Dr. Monica Schneider, professor of psychology at Portland Community College. Dr. Schneider, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Now, what I'm interested in hearing from you, from your professional and scholastic perspective, is first of all, why do we as members of a free society, first of all, why do we feel the need to do things like march and demonstrate? And secondly, why does it feel good to do so?
Well, those are great questions. And I'm going to borrow from the field of social psychology to help answer those questions. I believe one place to start is value systems. When a person has a value, usually it feels more like an unmet need. So I need to do something to express my value, honor my value, and, be someplace where my values matter. So a number of studies have been done to rank order values, and one among them is freedom, freedom of expression. So when someone says you can't, we often feel even more compelled to to go back at that and say, yes, I can. And so I think a first statement is to look at personal values. How important is it to someone to express themselves, and how much do they need this this forum to do it? Which brings me to a second point, which is, so I have a value that my values need expression, my values need to be verified or acknowledged and observed, but I'm not sure I want to go downtown. I'm not sure I want to be in public service. I'm not sure if I'm going out there willing to do much. Then I feel what Leon Festinger, a social psychologist, called cognitive dissonance. And have you heard of cognitive dissonance?
Indeed,
before?
I have, yes.
Well, it's a state of tension, and it motivates me to act. I want to reduce that tension, so I need to act. So here I have this value, and I was at the march on Saturday, and I saw a number of places that people expressed their values, many of them in signs. There were an array of values expressed about health care, mental health, the economy, and also the a state of our climate changes. So here we have people expressing their values on signs and by their own presence, and they probably had some motivation to reduce the tension because here we have a situation where people feel some tension about what's going on. So to reduce that, there's a need to act, to show cause. So I think that's part of what may motivate people to go beyond just thinking that something's important and then actually doing something.
So if I were to sum up what you just said, essentially we demonstrate, we march because it is an affirmation of our values. And it also helps resolve any internal tension we might feel over between our values and what we may perceive in the world. And doing so in the presence of like-minded compatriots, I would imagine, has sort of a reinforcing effect on all of that.
Oh, most definitely reinforcing. You may think in your own home that you're isolated and thinking that I must be the only one that might feel this way. You start to interact in a crowd like that, and you also feel somewhat empowered that you have more confidence in your expression because you're not singling out, you're not single about it. Of course, a lot of people have done a lot of good being single about an issue, but on this occasion, I think people were looking for like-mindedness, some support, some comfort from the fact that they weren't the only ones who thought this way. And yet, even so, the crowd was diverse. There wasn't any one cause, there isn't any one sign that everybody rallied around. There was a lot of eclectic views in that crowd. And I think for that reason, it drew more people because it had more openness to what they could express. They brought with them their concern in the form of a sign or just by their being there, and they felt validated, I think, by that experience.
So peaceful protest is a healthy thing, not just individually, but communally as well, it sounds like.
Oh, I think so. And I think that we've heard enough history in our country that lots of things do get done when people gather and form groups and express themselves. And you may say, well, what good could it do? The decision's been made. But decisions can be reversed. Decisions can be modified. And if we speak for the majority, or at least some important things in the minority, we should have some feeling that it matters in this country, especially because we're built on a country of free expression and opportunity to express. And those are very core values people want to see have value, you know, have precedence right now. And, I think there's some worry, some threat, some wonder what could become of my voice. And so we gather those voices in one big group, and it feels a little more like you should not ignore this voice. You should not stop listening to my voice.
So contrary to the opinion expressed by some that that peaceful protest is essentially a waste of time, that it won't affect any real change, it sounds like you're saying that from both a psychological and a sociological perspective, there's data to suggest that that's not the case, that there's a salutary effect, as we mentioned, on the individual and on the community, and the possibility to affect meaningful change over the long term.
Oh, I hope so. And I think history has proven that. You think about the Vietnam War. You think about many things that have challenged us and how people have spoken up and represented our side of our view in Congress and the Senate. But even so, I think that by numbers of that kind, we feel like we can learn things, too, from the people in that crowd. What else is important to them? How can we grab hold of those things and make some difference? But certainly policy can be affected by, you know, majorities of people that group together and speak as one. And so I think there's always going to be that opportunity in this country. We don't have one that just completely shuts us down because we don't think like everyone else. I think compromise has to come next. So I hear these loud voices, but then I hear that decisions have been made. How can we make it into a compromise? And that takes a little more commitment on people's part than to just be at a rally. So people need to pay attention to voting, need to pay attention to what they can impact in their own communities. And that leads me to a third point about all this, and that a lot of people were modeling good behaviors. I think they were trying to model the fact that they brought their children to show them that this is one way one can influence change. So that part, too, may have to be acknowledged here.
Well, Dr. Schneider, I really appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for sharing your professional expertise with us.
Well, you're so welcome. Thank you for asking me.
Absolutely. Thanks. And hope to have you on again sometime.
All right. Thank
you. All right.
You.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, you heard the doctor, everybody. Get out there and march. It's good for your health. It's good for your sense of community. It's good for the health of your community. It's good for the world. There you have it. Tell that to your conservative uncle next time you're having dinner. When he says, you're just wasting your time, because you're not. You're really not. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're talking about the demonstrations here in Portland over the weekend, and as well as those that took place around the globe. In particular, we're talking about the pretty stark difference in character and tone between the Friday night march in response to the inauguration of President Trump and the women's march on Saturday. Melissa writes into the Facebook page, that's facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to say, a comment about the police and the women's march. I'm a middle-aged white woman, and I'm fearful of the police. The value of permits, in my view, is to make the police behave. You get a permit, and the police agree to keep their toxic masculinity under control. The scariest part of the march for me was when half the crowd veered off of the approved route and marched parallel to NATO Parkway. I was sure the police would use that as an excuse to flex their muscles. Happily, they did not. I think the march was successful in many ways for many reasons, but I don't love that the Portland Police Bureau used our event as a public relations campaign. See how nice the cops are? Look at them. Aren't they cute in their pussy hats? These are the same cops that were beating and pepper spraying peaceful protesters the night before on the streets of downtown Portland. Not falling for it. Thank you for those comments, Melissa. I think on balance, that's a pretty accurate way to assess the situation. There was certainly a difference in the police response between the demonstrations Friday night and those on Saturday. And that difference was pretty stark. Let's go to the phones. Deanna, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Well, I'm really glad we're having this conversation, and particularly your points about marginalized communities being at the forefront, not trailing behind or somewhere out in nowhere land in terms of the masses of people who marched, of course, in Portland, were white. And it is imperative that all of us, I include myself in the white part, understand that the reality for people of color and people in any marginalized community is completely different from ours. I, too, am afraid of the police because I've had problems with the police. So one of the things I wanted to mention is I went and I kept thinking, what am I going to write on my sign? Because I want to influence or see the reaction, at least, of people around me to my statement. And so what I had on my sign was, stand up for the most marginalized among us, and we're standing up for us all. And I kind of was looking at and asking people, and people looked at my sign, and they said, oh, yeah, you know. But that doesn't mean they were committed to that, of course. It just means that I didn't see any, or any of that stuff going on. Another thing I wanted to ask about is, I may be completely wrong, but I thought I heard Joanne Hardesty say that, maybe I'm really wrong on this, but anyway, I thought she said that once Margaret and allies had taken over organizing this march, that now the NAACP was participating. Now, I may be completely wrong about that, but...
I honestly have to say I don't know. I don't know if Margaret stepping in brought the NAACP back on board in an official way. I really don't know. If there is somebody out there who can speak to that fact, we'd love to hear from
you. I hope so, because honestly, I would not have marched. And I was making sure, I thought, that that was the case, because when friends of mine, I'm a member of the Portland Raging Grannies, we decided we would not march if those groups were not only included, but strongly included. In other words, I never even got to see the stage. I don't even know who was on it. I have no idea who spoke. There were so many people there. It was like being on the New York subway system. I mean, we could hardly move. And one thing I will say against the police, sorry, what in the hell were they thinking, letting people get that crowded without trying to help us understand that, you know, if there'd been a medical emergency, nobody could have gotten out of where I was. Nobody.
Yeah,
really.
That's true. There were big pockets of that crowd that were completely immobile for long stretches of time.
That's right. And it didn't have to do with whether we were marching or not. You know, it took a long time to get that many people able to move.
Yeah, there were 100,000 people on the waterfront. It was unbelievable.
So I'm not going to criticize in any way the people who organized. I don't think they could have known that that would be the case. But the police should have helped us instead of standing around in pussy hats. And, of course, that's the other thing. I never saw one wearing a pussy hat. I never saw anyone posing with a picture. And that doesn't mean it didn't happen, because I heard about it and I was horrified. It is very different to see the water protectors at Standing Rock standing face-to-face with the police and saying to them, we love you. They don't mean we're fond of you. And that is a big difference, and that is a huge difference. What it means is we are here because we love all of humanity, and what we're doing is for all of humanity. When people cozy up to the police, especially when they've just done what they're known for doing, putting violence out on everybody, this is a very bad thing. And you're right, it pits the good against the bad. That's not true. What if all the same people that were there Friday night were in fact in that same crowd the next day?
I would imagine there's quite a bit of overlap between
that's
the
two. Right. And so what I also would like to really point out and ask you how you feel about this is I try to never use the word violence in characterizing anything that we, the people, do. The violence comes from the state. What we do is a response. I don't know how else you would characterize it. You might say disruption or whatever, but there isn't just violence and violence. It is not 50-50. It is not equal. Violence comes from the government, not only in form of tear gas and rubber bullets and everything else, but in form of policies. Black people suffer that violence every day. Indigenous people suffer that violence every day. Trans and gay and so forth and so on suffer the violence of violent policy every day. And if we come out and protest, that's not violence.
I think I'm going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for the call. That's, I want to take a minute to unpack what you said there towards the end, because I think this is an important conversation we need to have. I disagree with you that all the violence in these situations stems from the state. I disagree. I say that because I have witnessed it firsthand. I have seen members of an otherwise peaceful demonstration. I'm not talking about this past weekend. I'm talking about multiple times in the past here in Portland. I've seen members of an otherwise peaceful demonstration who are unwilling to show their faces in public. I have seen them carry out acts of destruction against property, and I've seen them physically intimidate or attempt to physically intimidate not only the police, but other members of the demonstration who were attempting to rein them in. I've always seen this element at demonstrations in Portland. And I'm not absolving the state of policies which are inherently violent or discriminatory towards underrepresented populations. I'm not absolving the state of that. But I think to lay the entirety of the blame for violence that happens to erupt at demonstrations on the backs of the police is incorrect. The police are not the only bad actors in many of these cases. Now I want to go on now to read a comment from a listener, Susan, who speaks sort of tangentially to this same issue. Susan writes, while the police have been guilty of many atrocities in the past, it serves no purpose to disavow those police who on Saturday past genuinely attempted to show their goodwill. The regrettable and outrageous police behavior that resulted in the Black Lives Matter movement should rightfully be condemned. However, it also resulted in a large-scale attempt across the country to improve their public behavior. For those of us on the left to treat all police in all situations as the same is denying what the purpose of the Women's March was, to look anew, to see things differently, and most importantly, to recognize individual differences. Somebody has to grow up here and start seeing better possibilities, and that includes not condemning all police. Well, thank you for that, Susan. I think you're spot on. The law enforcement community is not a monolith any more than the African-American community or the LGBTQ community. These are groups of people, of individuals, who may differ greatly in their outlook on the world, and who are united by their choice of profession. That said, we all know that law enforcement can attract a certain type of toxic male who enjoys having power and enjoys wielding it over other people. That's undeniable. But it's also undeniable that amongst the ranks of law enforcement are many people who took up the job out of a sense of duty, out of a genuine desire to serve their communities. And we need to give those people credit when it's due. We need to give those police officers credit when it's due. Law enforcement is not a monolith. And I'm not saying this to excuse anything that happened on Friday night. I'm not saying this to excuse any past reprehensible police behavior. This is simply to say that we cannot paint any group of people with a broad brush and expect it to stick to every member of that community. 503-231-8187. Let's go to the phones. Nancy, good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling, and this I'm really enjoying this conversation, and I never have heard the word intersectionality before.
Oh.
And so I appreciate you drawing that out about white privilege, and I'm Caucasian. I'm also a single mom, and I'm a Democrat, progressive Democrat, liberal, and this is the first time I have felt attacked politically, you know, by the political atmosphere for being a progressive Democrat liberal. And I really appreciated, you know, I was reading up, like, if the police got violent, and I was at the Portland Women's March, and if they got violent, you know, how I would keep a composure of nonviolence within, if it was that kind of atmosphere. And I was really relieved that there wasn't that atmosphere, but I had read about at the inauguration the day before and up in Portland and in Washington, D.C., of people being arrested in the use of pepper spray and other concussion bullets. And I have been following in Standing Rock and the use of violence against both the press and the all the peaceful water protectors in Standing Rock. And I saw how when they called on religious people like to come in, and then the veterans came in, and when there were Caucasian people joining, the police, it helped, you know, how they had been being, the dogs had been being used, and the water cannons, and people being arrested and put in dog kennel cages and having just numbers written on their arms, and that kind of the racism in that area against Native American people in North Dakota is really big. And so the solidarity with the intersectionality of all groups coming together to protest against injustice, like, it's really, really important. And especially with Trump's administration, like, I read an article from The Intercept by Spencer Woodman on January 19th, and it's called Republican Lawmakers in Five States Propose Bills to Criminalize Peaceful Protest. And in five states, Republican legislators have tried to pass, and in Indiana they passed one that they call it an anti-obstruction law, to arrest people who are blocking a highway if it's 10 or more people standing up with their First Amendment rights. And that police can use force by any means possible to stop the obstruction of the highway. So the other states are...
So we're witnessing the beginning of an official attempt to erode the First Amendment.
Yes. In North Dakota... In Minnesota, they want to stiffen fines and make jail sentences from 1 year jail time for any obstruction of highways of First Amendment people, American citizens expressing their First Amendment rights. In Washington State, they're calling it economic terrorism, and anything that obstructs, interferes with any person's right to profit if protesters are blocking that. in Michigan, one of the Republican legislators has been trying to pass an anti-picketing law. And in Iowa, another Republican lawmaker has pledged to introduce legislation to crack down on any highway protests. And just this trend with corporate profits being more important than, like, how police are, they took oaths to protect people, the American people, and just when police are used to protect the profiteering of corporations instead, you know, like it's, we're seeing this trend with the Trump administration, and so I really appreciate what you're saying, you know, that like when they say, oh, you have to have permits, you have to go exactly here and follow the laws, otherwise we can use force against you. And sometimes people, like we, First Amendment rights, like we have the right to gather and talk and communicate, and what are the injustices against us, and how to organize to stand up for it, you know, and not have this threat of you know, these laws that will interfere with our First Amendment rights.
Listen, I'm going to have to let you go so we can give some others a chance here before the end. But thank you for bringing this up. I think this is something that we in the resistance need to keep an eye on. Official attempts to curtail our First Amendment right to gather and to peaceably assemble. And while we're on the topic, this notion of permits to protest strikes me as just fundamentally silly. Every citizen of the United States has a permit to assemble. It's called the First Amendment, and it applies from sea to shining sea. So there's a there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance that arises there, as our guest, Dr. Monica Schneider, might observe. 503-231-8187. Who's next? Robert, good morning.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I'll try to be quick. I just wanted to wanted to agree with you on that last point about no permits, but the city of Portland, and now it looks like Ted Wheeler, is trying to restrict that First Amendment right to only those people with permits, and those are going to be the big quote-unquote parades. I was at both marches, and they were both fantastic in their own way. I was there on Friday night, and I was in the front lines, and I don't know if you were.
No, but I didn't make it out on Friday night.
Well, I was. And I did not see this violence that was supposedly taking place except from one side, and that was the police. And I'm not being hyperbolic here. There was a face-off at the Burnside Bridge,
yes.
And they used an incredibly toxic gas that debilitated not just the people on the front lines. There was a group of Black Bloc protesters who I thought pretty valiantly were moving towards the front of the line. And as soon as they saw the Black Bloc protesters coming to take this bridge, which they gladly gave up to the entire protest on Saturday without any resistance whatsoever. They tried to block a few people here and there, but then they eventually just gave up the entire Morrison Bridge. But on Friday, they arbitrarily decided that, no, this is going to be you're not going to cross this bridge, and we're going to reroute you in whichever direction we so choose. They sprayed an entire portion of the protest with an incredibly toxic gas that debilitated not just the frontline people, but people 30, 40, 50 feet behind.
Yeah, you can see
later in the day, they fired something called pepper balls. So these are like the cluster bombs of crowd control. They explode and they send out, they bounce up off the ground and they send out in a 50-foot radius, according to the website, pepper balls that go in every direction. So these things are flying everywhere in Pioneer Square. There's CS CAS flying over our heads as we're standing in Pioneer Square or on the sidewalk landing behind us. I saw a protester get hit right below his eye. He was bleeding pretty profusely by one of these projectiles, not the pepper balls. The pepper balls were landing all around also. This is Ted Wheeler saying that it's okay to use this kind of force against citizens of Portland who are, for the most part, protesting pretty damn peacefully. There are a few plastic bottles being thrown at police, a few plastic containers I saw out of frustration by some people in the march. But this kind of stuff has to be condemned by not only the people at the protest on Friday, obviously, but the people on Saturday who are out there marching wonderfully but who are, you know, mugging with the police. It's disgusting. I think it's really disgusting. And
hey, listen, thanks for the call. And I'm sorry I got to cut you off, but we're just about out of time here. I have to emphasize that I was not out there on Friday night. I was not an eyewitness to anything that went down. But the video evidence that I have seen online suggests to me that the use of pepper spray by the Portland police was unwarranted. They didn't appear to be provoked or threatened in any way. It appears to me, and this is, again, just me watching the video online, it appears to me that they could have chosen to exercise a great deal more restraint than they did. And this is the first I've heard about the pepper balls. I'm going to have to do a little more digging on that front. And with that, we have arrived at the end of today's program. Wow, I wish we had some more time. I feel like we could talk about this subject for another couple hours at least. I really appreciate those of you who called in to share your experiences from the protests over the weekend. Likewise, those of you who wrote. This is the beginning of the resistance. This is going to take effort from all of us. This is going to take intersectionality. Remember, resistance without intersectionality is simply an exercise of white privilege. So support your fellow citizens, all of your fellow citizens. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. We'll be back at you next week.
It's coming through a crack in the wall on a visionary flood.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Roots Before Leaves, an Open Styles Jam on Saturday, January 28th from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. at Groove Nation in Vancouver, Washington. Roots Before Leaves will feature dance, ciphers, battles, fashion, and art, with preliminary competition starting at 4:30 p.m. and the main event starting at 6 p.m. Again, that's the Roots Before Leaves, an Open Styles Jam on Saturday, January 28th from 4 to 10 p.m. at Groove Nation, 5411 East Mill Plain Boulevard in Vancouver, Washington. More